We can have the lights once again. The Coptic text tells us of wondrous stones will be found. And the Arab historians of the 10th, 11th, and 12th century speak of stones like glass, one can see through. What had happened to these wondrous stones, these wonderful objects? We're just beginning to find out in the 1990s, particularly through the work of Rudolf Gantendrink in Germany, we were electrified to find that there were other possibilities with the so-called star shafts in the Kings and Queens Chamber. May I have the lights in the foreground turned off? Immediate lights. By comparison, I hold my small tape recorder next to one of the stellar openings in the King's Chamber, so you can see how relatively small these are. So wonder, well, how could these be used, the stellar shafts, because some of them were closed up by masonry and stones weighing from 2 to 20 tons. Conceivably, at an earlier stage of evolution, before the capstone or the upper part of the pyramid was complete, the lower portion still could have been used as an astrophysical area or platform for measurement. In 1973, we published, 20 years before Robert Gravel, the coordination of the star shafts going on the south side to the belt of Orion, on the north side to the circumpolar stars in the system of Alpha Patronus, Ursa Major. But if you use my laser beams to connect now the Queen's Chamber with that of the King's Chamber, namely the prophets call the Abba and the Imma, the father and the mother side of creation, or the Ori Coptic Christian saw in the Eye of Horus, the side view of the Eye profile, we see the ability to see creation either through positive programming of star birth, centropy, or the negative death of the stars and planetary worlds called entropy, negative entropy. All of this is seen in terms of a model of still yet another phase that we as human beings can go through. And that is the induction and entrainment of being in this and similar structures within certain styles of mantric vibration or prayers can raise our consciousness to a level where the mind begins to harness and use other parts of the sleeping self. Sacred geometries appear and literally higher beings of intelligence manifest themselves. Now this happened a few years ago when Robert Watts was with us in Egypt. He was atheistic. He deplored the concept that the Egyptians actually had a higher logic behind the acoustical properties of their great chambers, but in listening to the certain mantric sounds that we used, he, Robert Watts, also shifted into an altered state of consciousness. What is being said here in this picture is if we use musical sounds, we will find the subharmonics, the other complementary aspects to the rooms yet to be opened where documents will be found. And in some unique way, rather than reaching to the left or the right, the north or the south star shaft, we will align ourselves directly with our own better programming. In other words, we will realize the pyramid represents our body in stone. The King's Chamber and the copper, the human race in this part of the electromagnetic spectrum. In March of 1993, Gantenbrink and his associates built this very unique Ufolog small robotic system with cables, fiber optic materials, and many of you have seen from the international documentaries. With special cameras, they were able to go up one of the star shafts and bring back a report and fill some 60 plus meters into the size of the Great Pyramid, a small door with copper hinges, or copper parts was seen. We believe that behind the door there is still yet another chamber, possibly connected with the name of Osiris or Amun-Ptah. And this is the reason that there is such a unique coordination that is going on with the symbols throughout the world, according with the meta symbols that were there between Egypt. By using other musical technology techniques, we were able to enter into some of the side chambers behind the kings and queens chamber. Chambers that were filled with sand used by the masons as they left the major pyramidal rooms after they were constructed. This suggests the architecture of an original pyramid on top of which the present pyramid was built. In these side chambers, we found interesting notations suggesting that they were used many times in the reinforcements of the pyramid, later Egyptian dynasties. Here we are pictured in 1997-98 with some of the small ground-penetrating radar systems. This was the first systematic attempt to look at the tunnels yet to be found beneath the small pyramids as they relate to the so-called King's and Queen's Chamber. We were quite successful in documenting a series of pathways that suggested that there were at least tunnels on three different levels. We see one series that was uncovered by the German Egyptologists that some believe were used as boat pits. The question is, what are boats doing in the desert? Unless they symbolically represent the coming of the architects or gods in the early moment of prehistory. Were these pits used for some type of water initiation? Dr. Hawass believes that the blood and the water would collect here, and these were areas of purification. There are many theories, and so one has to be rather careful, but the fact of the matter is there are multiple levels of these tunnels running all throughout Giza, which becomes more and more like an astrophysical computer, showing alignments with star systems over very long periods of time, so tens of thousands of years. We go now to the underground sanctuary, the region of Rastau, the region of Osiris, the god of the underworld, the prototype of Christ, according to the Coptic Christians. And we look at a recent documentary that was on international television in February, March of 1999. Again, I ask that the cameras be turned off.
2 years ago, an American research team...
2 years ago, just name it.
...ground-penetrating radar reported odd readings underneath the Sphinx. The findings suggested the possibility of an underground chamber. More recently, however, Dr. Hawass discovered just that, a subterranean chamber. And it lies at the bottom of a long shaft, not far from the Sphinx. This long, hidden chamber honors the greatest of Egyptian gods, Osiris. In ancient myth, he's the principal figure of the country's genesis, a benevolent god-king who brought civilization to Egypt, but then was brutally murdered by his brother. Osiris was reborn as the Lord of Eternity, ruler of the dead, the chief judge at the trial of all souls. And as we now learn, he is part of the wonders at Giza.
Maury, we talk so much about dispelling myths. How about confirming one? About 2,500 years ago, the Greek historian Herodotus, who I guess you could call the world's first foreign correspondent, visited this site. Local villagers and guides told him that he could find the tomb of a king buried deep beneath the Giza Plateau. Well, about a year ago, Dr. Zahi Hawass, who joins me here at the mouth of the shaft, embarked on what he calls his greatest adventure ever. Zahi, you've been doing this for some 30 years. Why is this so amazing?
You know, Susie, it's amazing because this is the first time that they excavate underneath 100 feet in water. Before, I excavate on sand and dirt. And also, at the same time, I discovered that this is what Herodotus talked about. And I found that this is the tomb of Osiris. Let's go and see what we're talking about.
Our first descent is about 20 feet. A chance to get warmed up to the rickety, rusty ladders. Now it gets intimidating. The second leg is a major drop as the shaft narrows before opening to a room once obscured by dirt and sand. Zion and men cleared it to find a burial chamber with six rooms.
Not that chamber with the open rooms.
So this is the second level, 55 feet down, right?
Yeah.
What did you find here?
You know, I excavated this part. I found six rooms cut in the rock, two red granite sarcophagus, and pottery. And
is this what happens that bone fragments are poured on the floor?
Somewhat
like an Easter egg hunt.
Gave me the date of this place, 500 BC, 2,500 years ago.
And what made you think that there was anything beyond this?
You have to look for the other level. This is the adventure. Let me take you to show you the most amazing thing that you've ever seen in your life. But let us take our jackets off because it's so hot there.
All of the hydraulic equipment has been conveniently removed from the second level for this documentary.
Oh, my. Upon discovery, the third level was submerged. When the water was pumped out, Dr. Hawass had the find of his life.
Can we hear of the sides of the so-called Osiris tomb?
Yes, but there is great adventure. Adventure in archaeology.
And here we have the sub-chamber, approximately 100 feet. For 33 plus meters beneath the sands of Giza. We see here the so-called lid of the coffers.
What is this?
Susie, this is the tomb of Osiris.
The god of the underworld. This once extravagant mausoleum, a moat with four pillars engraved with hieroglyphics constructed thousands of years ago, was intended to be a symbolic shrine for the keeper of the afterlife.
If you would look down here, I will show you what is here. Look, there is the second part of the sarcophagus. Goes down, I think about 1 foot down. And up, you see what we did. The lid is up. You want to see the length of that lid? Okay, let us watch out.
How much would something like this weigh?
Oh, the weight of this was 11 to 12 tons. What's the length?
About 9 feet.
9 feet. Then the whole lid and the second part is about 11 to 12 tons weight.
And how could they get 12 tons out of 100 feet?
You know, when they cut the shaft, they fill the shaft with sand, and they cut side shaft. They take the sand from the side shaft, and the sarcophagus will come down a piece by piece.
And there's more. Archaeologists agree that below the Giza Plateau lies a network of tunnels. Could this be the center? A gateway? Our first evidence is stunningly revealed.
I will go now and show you this exciting place.
Take a look at this sign on the wall, though.
Zahi, the American prophet Edgar Casey, talked years and years ago about a lost civilization, hidden tunnels that would lead to answers about it. Could this have anything to do with that?
You know, Susie, Casey, Edgar Casey, and lost civilization, it's a legend, it's a myth. The Arabs in the last century, they talked about all of this, and psychic brought it to us back. I did not excavate this tunnel yet.
We were the ones who did it.
When it meets us, but I always say that you never know what the sand and the tunnels of Egypt may hide secrets.
Zahi, thank you so much for allowing us to experience this adventure with you.
So this was the telecast. 2 years ago, before this event, as some of you know, my last visit, it was our team that went down who discovered the coffer, the lid. And here are some pictures from this amazing expedition where we brought our own lights. There was no lighting available, and so we had to bring 220 watts, with batteries, portable systems, the whole works. This is done very carefully because of the water trough and because of a labyrinthine system that could easily electrocute a person if they were carrying electrical apparatus. We see the speaker connected with one of the tombs on the second level down. Note the regularity and the near perfect patterns of how these large, massive tombs were cut, and the coffer itself has a very interesting machine-like edge on the four sides, suggesting that this meticulous work was brought in from above or below with great hydraulic finesse. Desiree, my wife, is pictured here with some of the apparatus we had to bring to the lower depths. It was very, very difficult to breathe the deeper we went. But we were able to take inventory of the first of a series of very large rooms. As I stated before, some of these rooms were very, very massive, like those one finds in ancient cathedrals. The openings were obviously there as a part of a much earlier strata of architecture. In the three major traditions of the Middle East, the Judaic, the Christian, and the Islamic, there's a great reverence to Idris, or Hinnok, Enoch, as he is called, and a recognition that Enoch is the scholar, the scribe, that shows the baseline, the water complex of a much earlier city. We believe that what we're seeing here is one of the water areas of a vast hydraulic system that connected Giza proper with an ancient lake and also the Mediterranean proper. With very sophisticated computers and our battery systems, we were able to take measurements, and we were able to move across the water with inflatable boats. Next. And now we turn off the cameras again. You'll see the original film of our going down into the lower depths. The ladders were brought in long before Dr. Hawass made his profound announcements. Special lighting is used. We see on the series of the three levels, the first of a series of remarkable rooms. Again, it's very difficult to see in the absence of ambient light with the use of simple flares, the small artificial light sources. There is a series of massive coffers. We can see here some of the water apparatus, and certainly not the bone fragments that were conveniently poured on the floor for the sake of the Fox television special. The building of the Aswan Dam, Lake Nasser, 1961, by the Soviets, allowed the water levels to reach up and flood the temple baseline of many of the great temples along the Nile. And as a consequence, many of these lower temples were out of reach by professional teams until recently. We see the smooth sides of one of the openings of the interior, one of the massive coffers weighing between 12 and 20 tons, some of them larger than the openings of the actual rooms, suggesting that these were symbolic models. Here we see with the pipes and the pumping apparatus that was removed to pull out the water from the lower depths. And then as we descend to a much lower elevation, 33 plus meters, we see some interesting details of areas that lead off in different directions, suggesting the labyrinthian maze way that Enoch has predicted in the Book of Knowledge. More specifically, aspects of the ancient city of Enoch that the Bible speaks of. Other geologists and archaeologists make the descent. This had to be done in small groups because it was difficult to breathe. Once you get the full impact of what it means to be beneath the earth, in the realm of Rostal, the underworld, and what this means for present history, because if documents are found, they would not only mobilize the three major religions to recognize a higher source, a much earlier source, where Jesus as the Christ child was brought to Egypt. Moses was there in Egypt. The great prophets and patriarchs all took reference to Egypt before it was defiled in the Quranic periods. But if earlier documents could be found, then the Greek, Egyptian, the ancient historians could see.
Wow. That's right.
That we are finding, as it were, the blueprints of the experiment that is now coming to completion. That we were a experiment that was brought to this world. We look now at the size of some of the water channels, the molt, and the bottom parts of alleged pillars that were on the four sides of the Osiris tomb. I have to be very careful for I do not believe this is the only Osiris tomb, for all of the tombs in the lower part of Egypt reference Osiris as Lord of the Dead. We can see the rooms that were cut, a work in progress that was pushing out. And on the other side, we see the opening that Dr. Hawass was standing before in the 1999 special. In 1973, I was shown the underground labyrinthine system, and so I could not believe it when my wife and I were there some 25 years later, exactly in the place where we used remote sensing and remote viewing to find the openings. Not only the openings, but also the top of the sarcophagus that Hawass and company take credit for. So if we can stop at this point, go back to our documents. Next.
We see here the lid and the human footprint. See the Nike? Here is the top of the 9 foot long coffer lid, length and fall. Tons is still embedded in the floor. You can see the apparatus around. This is the proof that our research team was there first. We were the ones who found not only the openings to the sacred chamber, but we know this connects with a whole avalanche of history about to open. This connects with the return of the architects, or to use the terminology of Mircea Eliade, the great anthropologist or anthropologist, the myth of the eternal return. The guardians, the angelics, the architects come back to salvage the experiment of the human race. We see here another area that was uncovered. Next. The speaker is saying also one of the underground rooms, of which there are many. Showing that there was a previous period before the classical period of some 3000 BC and the dynastic kingship list. We see here one of the molt areas. We see our technicians being very, very careful not to fall into the water with the apparatus. This did happen. Fortunately, the apparatus was not connected at that point. horology mean 1 foot deep, it was 3 feet in one place. We saw some very interesting details suggesting that some of these collection areas were used as batteries. It would have provided the power necessary for those who were doing the tunneling underground. If we have to bring the power system down to see all the details, obviously the ancient civil engineers and architects had to have some light source. And of course, the Egyptian texts speak of these wondrous lights. So whether your tradition is of the Christian, the Judaic, or the Islamic, or is the Eastern traditions, there is reference to a superluminal light source or higher power that was used in the creation of these great tombs, which were absolutely tombs, that they were schools, libraries, academies, places on the earth marking a grid pattern from east to west, north to south, where the human race was being evolved and tested over periods of time. That is coming now into a harvest period. Another series of tests that we did were a series of musical tests. Here I am with the coffer of the King's Chamber. And we were able to bring computers inside for the first time and record a whole series of electronically generated pure tones. We found that the were diminished into inaudible ranges, that is to say, we couldn't hear them, but the computers were able to pick up the tonal qualities and the acoustical qualities, and by marking the points of extreme resonance produced along the trajectory of a certain path with electronic measuring devices, an outline or portrait of the acoustical architecture of the terminal environment was produced. Meaning that anyone stepping into the King's Coffer of the granite, reddish granite, would know that this is the part we as human beings occupy, the reddish portion of the electromagnetic spectrum. The resonance that we captured was 90 cycles per second F, 180 cycles per second F, 207 cycles per second C, 360 cycles per second, F sharp. In other words, there were very precise patterns of musical tuning. On this earlier map that I published, we see at the top of the schematic the color spectrum from red to dark purple in terms of cycles per second on the basis of the Bohr atom or hydrogen red, 0.00006547 centimeters. We found that certain sounds and acoustical properties, when acted upon, would produce certain metaphysical and paraphysical forms, as we see here at the bottom of the screen. Circles, triangles, pentagons, pentagons within pentagons, mandala-like structures could be produced in a fashion similar to that of Hans Genny, the great Swiss paraphysicist musicologist did. I want to play some music as we go into meditation and experience what I call the crossing of the three veils of light of three-dimensionality as portrayed in ancient text. So when we go to the Egyptian Book of the Dead or the Coptic text of the early Christians, or even the Sufi, we recognize that the open tomb was to represent where we were within the greater evolutionary track of the universe.
Perhaps kick off with contributing, say, 20 points.